and welcome to a special late night edition of the Multimedia Men podcast. This is a very special episode. This is a very late night episode where it's going to get groovy. I'm Brian Kluger, of course, and I'm joined by the fantastic, the magnificent, the omnipresent Tom Nix. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's late night. We're going to get groovy. I'm not sure how I feel about omnipresent.
You're not sure how you feel about omnipresent?
Yeah. It's a very, it's a strange adjective for a human. Unless it's a fat joke. Maybe it's a fat joke.
It's not. It's just that you're everywhere and your essence is everywhere. In all of our lives. Is that a fat joke? Oh, and it is Tom Nick's birthday today. He is a glorious 21 years old. Finally!
That's correct. Finally. Finally.
Finally.
Like, I've been waiting for 21 years to get to this moment.
Yeah, it's been a long time since you and I have done a show together. I've missed you.
I've missed you too. And it has been. It's got to have been at least, what, 6 months maybe?
Something like that. I don't know if it's been – it might be been 6 months. But we have a lot to talk about. We're, of course, Tom – if you don't remember who Tom Nix is
– And why the fuck don't you, you pieces of shit?
Yeah, there you go. Fuck you. And we usually do a wrestling show called Wrestling Is Everything Is Wrestling. But today, I think we're going to change it up since it's late night. It's Tom's birthday. So I think we might even get into some records and talk about some soundtracks and vinyl. Hell, we might even talk about movies and how horrible Wonder Woman the movie is. We'll see. We don't know.
I'm finished with this podcast. We can do it again. Never again.
Ah, triggered. I love it. I just got to get a rise out of Tom. So I noticed Tom I noticed that it's your birthday. What have you been doing for your birthday? Anything special? Did you eat some cake at least or some
ice? No, I'm an old man, Brian. Do you know what I did on my birthday? I went to work. Then I sat around my house, took a nap, listened to some records, and unloaded boxes of old DVDs that I need to sell. And that's it. I didn't go out to eat. I didn't get a cake. I just sat around my house being old and not caring that it was my birthday.
Oh, I love you. Unloading DVDs, it has me intrigued because I did this back. So I used to have a collection of, I think, around 7,000 or 8,000 movies, like DVDs, and I sold most of them back in 2009 to replace them with HD DVD, which I then turned to Blu-ray. But I'm curious because I remember going through all mine and going through like all these weird movies that nobody's heard of and selling them. What's it been like for you selling your DVD collection?
Well, I haven't sold anything yet. I have been going through it trying to figure out which ones I want to keep and which ones can go. Obviously, most of the DVD collection, which I'm probably just regular DVDs. I'm probably at about like 500 or 600 now, maybe. Maybe a little less than that, but it's still fairly significant of just DVDs. That didn't count Blu-rays, of which there are also many, many, many. I haven't started my Blu-ray purge yet. But like I've got some out-of-print DVDs, and I've got some stuff that just probably will never get a Blu-ray release or maybe not even a digital release, so I'm probably going to hold on to those. But like I have so many – you know, like I've got The Aviator and The Departed and like Anchorman and all the stuff that I have rebought on Blu-ray that makes zero sense why I would still have this in my house, except for I am a horrifying pack rat that doesn't like to get rid of anything. So I will find out what the sale looks like probably in a couple of weeks. And I feel very bad for the Half Price Books employee who has to deal with a guy bringing in like 1,200 discs to get rid of.
So with your out of print stuff, I still have a lot of DVDs that are out of print that I will definitely not get rid of unless they come out on Blu-ray. One of my in my collection is the Ilsa collection, She-Wolf of the SS. I love that collection. It's hard to find. What are some of the ones that you're definitely keeping? And before you answer that, what's the ratio right now of stuff you're keeping and stuff you're selling?
I will, once I get over the fact that I need to sell this stuff, I would say over half of it is going, I mean, from the DVD perspective, I'll probably keep 20% of my DVDs, from like old box sets and out of print stuff, or just, you know, maybe old wrestling DVDs or whatever. But like, I would say out of the total collection, I can easily see half of my 1,000 or 1,200 or whatever I've got. I haven't counted them all yet. I can easily see half of that going away. But some of the stuff I want to keep, like, I've got the old out-of-print set of Freaked that has, like, bonus features that didn't get ported to the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
The Blu-ray obviously looks better, but there's no features on it. I have a DVD of The Spanish Prisoner, one of the old David Mamet movies that no one really knows. It's a really awesome con man movie that has a like serious Steve Martin performance. Like, he's not being funny in any way, shape, or form in it. It's very strange, but very good. What else do I have?
Are you getting any rid of any Criterion stuff?
I'll be getting rid of a shitload of Criterion stuff because I don't watch half the stuff that I own. I just, like, back in the day, like, I think, like, some old lady, like, cleared out her son's collection, or maybe it was her collection, and, like, a Half Price Books in Cincinnati, Ohio, in, like, the early 2000s. And every time I'd go into my local Half Price Books, there would be, like, 10, 20, whatever, new Criterion collections that were all half price, because Half Price Books. So I ended up buying a bunch of them back in the early 2000s on DVD that I just either never watched or watched once, and I don't need them anymore. I've sold off some that I replaced on Blu-ray, but there's still a lot that I, you know, isn't on Blu-ray yet, and there's still a bunch that I just need to get rid of. I just don't watch movies nearly as much as I used to. I just don't either. Not that I don't have the time, I just don't dedicate the time to them like I used to when I was 24 or 25. So it's just hard for me to say goodbye to physical media. But once I get over that mental hurdle and I don't have like – I go from having what, probably 1,700 movies in my house down to like having 150 movies in my house, I will feel much better.
There you go. It all going digital. So are you doing the same thing with like – toys or your artwork or posters or anything?
Absolutely, everything must go. I've got a bunch of toys. I mean, I'll keep a lot of the toys that I have because I like most of them and they display nice. I've got some ones in boxes that I bought, you know, at like random toy stores that I don't really need. I'm a big take the toys out of the boxes guy. Like, set them up or play with them or do something with them. I'm not a big, you know, keep it in a box unless it's like supposed to be a collectible or whatever reason. But like most of the stuff that I have is just like, you know, like NECA Pacific Rim stuff and Doctor Who toys and Hellboy and Godzilla and Universal Monsters stuff. And like, there's a couple I'll keep in a box because they were like limited edition, but like most of it I just take out. So yeah, I'll probably get rid of most of those. Posters, I got to get rid of like half, if not more.
I feel like if you sold
all... Which is obscene. My poster collection is obscene, Brian.
I feel like if you sold your poster collection, you could probably have enough to buy, like, a fancy, like, Lexus SUV with cash.
That's probably not even, like, inaccurate. Like, if I sold over half of my collection for what it's probably worth, I would probably have close to, like, a down payment on a house.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So I got to ask, why the purge? Why are you living this simple life? Are you going to get, like, a tiny house and live off the land, or?
No, I have a really big apartment. Like, I'm a single guy living in a 1,400-square-foot apartment, and I can barely walk around in it because there's so much shit in it. So, like, I just want more room. And most of the stuff I just don't need. Like, I need to force myself out of the collector's mindset. Because like you said, we are going digital in a lot of ways. And some of the stuff is just valuable and it's just sitting in a closet. Like, I don't look at it or use it. I just have it because I've been a collector for almost all of my adult life. So I just get things to have them. And I need to break that cycle of just get what you want and have it. And if you really want something new, sell off one old thing so you can replace it with the new thing. Otherwise, you are just collecting things to collect them, and it's not doing anyone any good. So it's going to be a hard lesson to learn, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I remember selling all my DVDs, and this is when I had my comic book store, and I remember going through boxes and boxes of DVDs, and you know, same thing you're doing, just going through. And then at one point, I mean, I definitely went through all of them, but I think I might have kept, I might have 20 left out of the thousands that I kept.
Yeah. And yeah, it's hard.
It is, it is. But, you know, once I did that, and like, so when I moved out of the physical location of my comic book store, I sold mostly online for a year. And then, when I had a Black Friday sale at the house, my house, and I had a yard sale with everything out, like 50 long boxes of comics and like bins and bins and bins of action figures and statues and everything. And just had everything out. It was crazy. So in the first hour of that, somebody came up and literally wanted to purchase everything I had. And it like – and – he had the cash to do it. Like, we made a deal, and it was a good deal. So I sat there for a second. I'm like, all right, do I buy more stuff with this, or do I just call it a day and do something else? And I sat on it for like maybe 20 minutes of like, it's a weight lifted off your shoulders, getting rid of so much stuff you have in your place and getting rid of it. And just like, doing the next thing, and like that.
And I'm big into vinyl now. Like, that's kind of my, I mean, I still like posters, but like, I need to stop. But like, I love vinyl. That's my big thing at the moment. So I feel like I won't stop collecting that piece of it. But like, DVDs, I just don't, like I said, I just don't watch them. So like, yeah, it might cost me, like, you know, I might look at something on Amazon and be like, oh, that's $6.99 this week, and I can own it, but I know that I'll either never watch it or I'll watch it once, and it would be just as cheap for me to rent it on iTunes or Amazon. And then once it's done, it's done. And like, I don't need to go back and watch it again. Like, I know I won't go back and watch it again. And I have like so many friends that are still big movie heads, and I'm sure if I went over their place or like we wanted to watch a movie together, they could bring a DVD if I didn't own it digitally. And that's just where I need to get my headspace into, is like, it doesn't matter how good the deal sounds on Amazon. If you're paying $10 for a DVD, no matter what you think it's worth, if you're never going to watch it or watch it one time, why are you spending $10? Which has been my biggest, like, I'm going through these DVDs today, and I found DVDs that I bought in 2002 that are in shrink wrap.
Okay, so what DVD or what movie, so let's say you're going to purge everything, what one movie, one DVD will you never get rid of? Like, no matter what, you will not get rid of this one movie because you know you love it so much.
Well, I mean, I'll never get rid of Jaws because it's my favorite movie, and I'll never get rid of Speed Racer. I'll never get rid of The Fountain. I'll never get rid of Penn's Labyrinth. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I will never, ever, ever get rid of because I know that there's going to be a time where I want to watch them and I want to have that disc or whatever it is. Like, I still have a small soft spot for physical media in my heart, even though a lot of it needs to burn in a fire. But, like, I won't get rid of Jaws. I won't get rid of any of that stuff. I'd probably even keep, like, the Twilight Zone TV show, and I'd keep my Doctor Who Blu-rays and you know, that kind of stuff. Like, I'll still have, like, once I'm done purging, my collection will still be larger than the collection of a normal average American. You know what I mean? Like a normal person probably has 20 to 50 movies that they own. And even when I purge, I will probably still have 150 to 200 titles, if not maybe a little more, but currently I have close to 2,000 and I don't watch them at all.
No, I totally get you, man. I totally understand where you're coming from. So I've been there. I've done that. And I guess I don't do it with, you know what? The only thing I guess I collect right now are records. And even then that's really slowed down because, you know, it just comes a point where you have so much. And movies, those just come in. But yeah, I don't have anything I like really collect anymore. It used to be toys, statues, and comics. Not anymore.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, like, toys I slowed down on because I just kind of like I used to be a massive Doctor Who collector, but then, like, they stopped making the 5-inch figures once Peter Capaldi started. So I didn't – well, they didn't stop, but they, like, they mass-produced 3.5-inch figures, and occasionally they'd come out with a like, special edition 5-inch figure that fit in with the rest of my set. So that was easy to stop collecting. I collected a bunch of Pacific Rim stuff. And they kind of ran out of that line. Like, I'm sure once the new movie comes out, they'll have a whole shitload of new ones that I'll probably end up getting. The toy collection, like, I just stopped because the stuff that I was collecting either became uninteresting or got lowered in quality, or I just got them all. Like, I'm a big Universal Monsters fan, and I used to go out and collect, like, Universal Monsters stuff, but, like, now those aren't really being produced that much anymore, so you have to go and spend a ton of money on, you know, vintage toys, which I'd rather spend that money on vinyl, so that's kind of my new thing. So I've got a cool little display of toys up. I got to reconfigure stuff. I'm now very big into the Mattel WWE figures. I have, like, God, I have to have, like, over 100 of them now.
Holy shit.
I got a scale ring for Christmas. So I will eventually be setting that up, and placing probably like all the current champions in it. And then I'll just have everyone else all around it. I'd probably easily have a hundred, elite, Mattel figures now.
Oh my gosh. Do you have a Chris Benoit figure?
I do, actually, from the old Jack Specific line. I found him when I was in Cleveland. He was, like, super cheap. He was out of the box, just a, you know, freestanding figure. And I was like, you know, he used to be one of my favorites. This is an okay likeness. I kind of feel bad about buying this, but I'm going to get it anyway. And he's in the very back. Like, when I set them up, he's always, like, in the back row, away from people's view. He's never prominently featured, but I do have one, yes.
Do you feel guilty having it? Because I wouldn't, because I love Chris Benoit. He didn't know what he was doing.
I do not love Chris Benoit. I mean, I did. Like, one of my fondest memories of, like, wrestling was watching WrestleMania 20 at Hooters with my best friend, and I guess there were probably, like, maybe four of us there. And like when he won the title, like we were just out of our minds, like just like screaming at the TV, like so happy. He was wonderful. And one of my favorite matches of all time is him and Jericho beating Triple H and Austin for the tag titles on a Raw. I remember watching that live and losing my mind. But like once you kill your family, and I don't care what the reason was, medical or not, you killed your family. You are a piece of shit. And I don't need you in my life anymore. So I don't watch his matches. I don't own his merch. Like I said, I do have that one figure because I found it cheap. And, you know, I kind of want to have all the Radicals just for completion's sake, you know, or technically all the Four Horsemen because he was in that for a little bit. But, like, that's it. Like, I have him specifically to be part of a existing group and not because I want him in my life anymore.
Okay. Oh, I gotta see this collection. This sounds amazing. When it's
once I get it set up, I'll definitely post photos of it. I just gotta get the ring set up and get them all out of boxes and figure out where I can put them. It's very large. I have a lot of them. I have a lot of them.
Well, I'm glad you're purging. I'm glad you're getting rid of stuff and then keeping some of the good things. But yeah, since we were talking about wrestling, some wrestling. Let's talk about this Wrestle Kingdom 12 that happened over on the New Japan Pro Wrestling circuit at the Tokyo Dome on January 4th, only a few days ago. I do believe, like, this is a pretty interesting pay-per-view because I think it really turned a lot of people on to a new brand of wrestling other than, of course, WWE. Your thoughts?
Say that again? You think this turned people on to a different style of wrestling?
Yeah, different, like, style, a different promotion, because most people, I would imagine, you know WWE and they're watching that, but New Japan is loads better than anything WWE produces. And since this was watched by a lot of people, do you think that there's an awakening type of thing for new new?
There's been an awakening. No, I don't. I mean, obviously, this was the highest watched New Japan show of all time. They had 40,000 people in the dome, which they haven't had in over a decade. They went to 100,000 subscribers on New Japan Pro World, which they've never been able to touch. I would say a lot of that's due to Chris Jericho. A lot of that's due to Naito and Okada and Omega as well. But I wouldn't fool anyone to saying this is like a new hot thing. Like 100,000 people subscribing is not a lot. Like it's still a very niche product. And until they really put a focus on America, which they're starting to do this year, like they're really going to ramp up the expansion in America. But I would say, I mean, you still have a good 2, 3, 4 years ahead of them until like a decent chunk of American wrestling fans know what that is. And I think when the first WWE wrestler leaves to go there, whether it's Dolph, whether it's Nakamura, whether it's Balor and the club, like whoever it is, then you'll probably start seeing a little more mainstream recognition, because like they'll want to see where their, you know, favorite wrestler or whatever went to. But yeah, I mean, I'm super stoked for their success. I'm super stoked they are getting more eyes on the product. But I mean, TNA has more people watching it than New Japan, and people don't know what TNA is. So like it's still very niche-y. I think there's a very, very big future for it here, because like you said, it's just better than WWE. Like the storylines have more thought, the wrestling is better, the storytelling in the match is better. For people that really liked wrestling when they were growing up, this is the perfect combination of a new style of like hard-hitting, fast-paced wrestling with extremely well-told sports-like stories in the ring. For me, it's the best wrestling in the world. And once they get a little more American foothold and more of the roster start speaking English and they start doing more shows hosted in America and not just broadcast in America, then yeah, then we'll start talking. But for now, it's the biggest they've ever been. It's a great first step, but they got a long way to go.
No, I agree with everything you said. A couple of the matches I really liked. I got to talk about the Fatal 4-Way match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight. Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll, Takahashi, and Kushida. That match was so damn good. And I know our dear friend Mike Pertil loves Marty Scurll.
His favorite wrestler. On the record, his favorite wrestler. He has a framed photo of him in his house.
He does. But damn, that match was just so good. Like, that was like the perfect in the element that you want to watch high flying, you know, smaller guys in a match that are hard hitting. That match was insanely good. Like, there was not one moment where I kind of like looked at my phone or, you know, looked up in the air. I just was focused on this match because it was that damn good.
No, it was extremely fun. There was a it was a little sloppy at times, but like everyone in the match is great. They were all they're all great characters. And like after this match, I'm pretty positive that Will Ospreay is the greatest high flying wrestler in the world today. I don't think anyone else can do what he's doing from a, like a moves perspective, but also like his time in New Japan. He's been there for almost 2 years now. He has learned how to sell so well for his opponents that he's like the perfect package of like highlight reel wrestling and storytelling wrestling. Like I just think he is on a totally different level than almost anyone else in the business from that kind of style. I think he is the best at this.
He is. And you know, for those of you who don't know who Will Ospreay is, like I seriously doubt you'll ever see him in a WWE ring because it just goes against what he really is. Would you agree with that?
Well, I've learned to never say never. I mean, he's 25, 24. Like, he's not even – like, he's 10 years away from hitting his prime. You know what I mean? Like, well, and he might bust his – he might blow his knees out in the next 5 years. Who knows? But, like – but while he'll definitely be doing what he's doing for the next several years where he's doing it in the – you know, in the UK and Japan – I can definitely see him being in a WWE ring eventually, but it's years down the line. But again, he's 24. He has a ton of time to do what he wants to do and then take the big paychecks and slow down a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he does. But yeah, that I love that match. Another one I really loved, the Young Bucks versus Roppongi 3K. That was a damn good match, and everybody
that was fun. It was fun, and the Bucks did some good selling, which is not common for them. I enjoyed it. It was a little too long for my taste. Like I didn't need an almost 20-minute match, but like, yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I like Roppongi 3K a lot. Like when those guys were teaming as the Tempera Boys, no one gave a shit about them, including me. But this whole new gimmick and the new style and like all the stuff they're doing is working really, really well. And they're a great addition to that tag team scene over there. I really like Roppongi 3K.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. They are quite fun. And, you know, we've seen Rocky Romero and all those guys before. So it was cool to see him. Also, we got to bring up Kota Ibushi and Cody Rhodes. I don't think it was Cody Rhodes' best match. Maybe he's saving himself for his own shit with All In. But Kota Ibushi's always fun to watch. I always think he's going to kill himself in a ring with the stuff that he does.
Yeah, he hates his own neck.
Yeah. I'm always scared about the way he falls. I'm just like, oh, God, he's going to go away. And I don't want him to because he really – I mean, Kota is like – he's really tall. He's a pretty big guy, and he's a – you know, does high flying stunts like the smaller dudes. And it seems like he has like a 13-inch long neck and it just gets battered around. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. it's a fun match and it's good because like Cody plays a great heel. Like he's just a classic dickhead bad guy in this match. And it's really easy to root for Kota Ibushi, even though it's easy to root for him because he's great. Like Cody makes you want to root for Kota even more. So yeah, I mean this is a fantastic mid card match, and I'm glad it wasn't for a title. I'm glad it was just a singles match. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it's just a classic good guy versus bad guy match, and sometimes that's just what you need.
True. I agree. All right, let's talk about Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho, which, according to one of the number one wrestling reporters, Dave Meltzer, this was a 5 out of 5 match. That's how good it was, according to him. It was damn good. Chris Jericho, for being 47 years old.
Would you give it 5 stars, Brian?
4.5, maybe.
Say no. I'm not going to get mad at you.
I'm going to say 4, 4.5 stars out of 5. I'm not going to give it a 5 out of 5.
I would I'm not sure where I would stand on it. I'd probably come really close to a 5, if not a 5, because it was my favorite. It was my favorite match of the night, and it over-delivered what I thought it was going to be. Like I had in my head, I was like you said, like Jericho's almost 50. We know he's good. Like, we know he's not a bad wrestler and that he was going to do whatever. But, like, he's also been wrestling for WWE for 20 years, basically. So, like, you know, that's the Jericho that everyone thought we were going to get. And we didn't get that Jericho. We got a real mean son of a bitch. And, like, the stuff he was, like... The stuff he agreed to, like the finish of the match, that one winged angle or that one winged angel onto the chair was brutal.
Yeah,
like, that was a brutal move. And he's almost 50 and he took it. He got hit in the face by a bunch of stuff. He was a complete asshole in a way that he hasn't been in forever. Like, he's been a bad guy for WWE recently. And he was always kind of like, you know, funny, smarmy, kind of a jerk. But he was like a actual dickhead.
Yeah, in he this was. Match. Like, even to like the refs and the people standing at ringside, he really was.
So, like, and I didn't read any review that Dave Meltzer gave on the match to explain why he ranked it 5 stars, and nor does he have to explain it because it's his ranking and he can do whatever the hell he wants. I think the expectation for this match was this is going to be a big deal because one of these guys is famous, but it was like really well put together. And the guy that we all kind of like thought we knew what kind of wrestler they were proved that he still has a ton of creativity and is willing to take a lot of risks and is willing to do a lot of stuff that he was not either able to do in WWE or just didn't choose to do in WWE. So seeing that version of Chris Jericho has me so pumped that he's sticking around for at least a little while and doing at least one more match. Because I don't know, like, that's the beauty of Chris Jericho, is that, like, you think you have him pegged for, like, this is what Chris Jericho is, and then he dumps you on your head, and he's like, no, fuck you, I'm whatever I want to be, and you will never see me coming, ever. And I love it. So, I really, 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 really like that match. It's not the most technically sound match. It's not the best wrestled match on the card. It tells an awesome story. But more than anything, it almost no matter how high your expectations were for it, it somehow exceeded it because we've never seen in 33 years of being a professional wrestler, we've never seen this Chris Jericho before. And that's incredible that that's even possible for someone who's 33 years into a career.
No, yeah, it's you're completely right. Like, watching this and you're just like, dude, they are really going at it. And with Omega's storytelling and amazing, you know, prowess and ability.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's incredible.
And then you have Jericho, who's... I think Omega is just like Jericho when Jericho was in his prime as well. But Jericho, like, hung with him, like, with, like, the young guys easily.
No, Chris Jericho had the upper hand in most of that match. Like, he was beating the shit out of Omega for most of it.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that how old he is, he can still do that. And, I mean, he's done it before, and this is what he does. And, like, the dude is... unstoppable. Like, he has this, he's done WWE, he's almost got a full-time heavy metal band that he tours with, he's got his crews, you know, what is the guy,
he's got
sleep?
A podcast that he records twice a week.
Yeah, like, how is this guy? I mean, I don't get it, but he's pretty much the best. And it was just so cool to see him and Omega really just give it their all for literally over 30 minutes in what looks like what would kill me in like less than 45 seconds.
Oh yeah. No, it's absurd. And like when he finally hangs up the boots, there is a case to be made that he is actually the greatest of all time, because like Ric Flair is awesome. Ric Flair is awesome, but Ric Flair was Ric Flair for 30 fucking years. You know what I mean? Like it was the same stuff, and Ric Flair probably stayed active 5 to 6 years longer than he should have stayed active. You know what I mean? Like, at a certain point, those matches got bad.
Well, yeah, because you're always like, oh, Ric Flair, here we go. We're going to get some slaps.
Because he's 57, 58. Yeah. You shouldn't be wrestling at that age. Like, right. You just shouldn't be doing it at the level you were expected to do it. Like, I mean, you could do opening matches or whatever, but, like, you know, I'm not trying to totally poo-poo on Ric Flair because obviously he's one of the best ever, but, like, Jericho has managed to have a career that has very clearly defined stages, totally different characters, is able to genuinely surprise people in an age that surprises are almost impossible, and at nearly 50 is still putting on top-tier matches with top-tier talent that are 15 years younger than him. Like, it is – like, he – whenever he says, this is it and I'm done – his career is going to be looked at as one of, if not the best wrestling career of all time.
I completely agree. And I hope he's here to stay for a long time, either in New Japan or WWE or even going to smaller indie stuff. I just want him around because remember,
I think he'll always be a WWE guy. I think everyone there is okay with him doing a little excursion over here and like having 3 or 4 or 5 matches or whatever he wants to do. But, like, he's going to retire with WWE. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame. His last match will be at a WrestleMania. Like, he's a WWE guy for life. Like, he'll never do an indie show ever. Well, I mean, I take that back. Like, when he's 55 or 60, maybe he'll show up at one to, like, talk or sign autographs. But, like, he's never going to perform at an independent wrestling show ever again in his entire life.
Yeah. He's not going to be a Terry Funk type of person.
No, because like you said, he's got Fozzie. He's got a bunch of stuff going on. He's got a podcast deal. He's got all these things happening that once he retires, yeah, he'll go to indie shows. And like I said, like he'll go to indie shows and he'll, you know, be the GM for the night or sign autographs or put someone over. I'm like, maybe he'll take a bump or maybe he'll hit someone with a chair or put someone in the lion tamer or something like that. But like he could easily get $5,000 to $7,000 just for showing up to sign autographs, and then on top of whatever he makes from the autographs, like, so he's fine. Like, he's fine.
He is good.
Sure, and I'm sure that after he retires, he'll probably still get a WWE like pension style thing, like a Legends contract, where he just shows up on TV once every couple of years, or like, you know, helps produce stuff or does web stuff for them or whatever. Like, he's set. He does not need to be an independent wrestler at 55. It's just not going to happen for him.
Yeah, no, it's not. It was such a good match.
I really liked it a lot.
I did too. Let's talk a little bit about Okada versus Naito. After watching Omega and Jericho, and just after you all listening to us talk about it, it's kind of exhausting in a way that you're like, oh God, we have the main event with these two amazing wrestlers, Okada and Naito, which lasted almost 40 minutes for the heavyweight championship. And it was just, kind of like, oh, like I loved it, but it was just, I Omega Jericho stole the thunder, man. They really did.
Oh yeah, they did. They did. Like, that match was better than expected. And, this match just was very like, so I've talked about this before, like that it's easy to look at the main event and be like, oh, that was okay, that was a good match, like it was a good match, right? Like, I'm not gonna say it's great, I'm not gonna say it's awesome, I'm gonna say it's good. But then you have to take a step back and like watch that match again, watch the main event again, and then in your brain pretend that that's Roman Reigns and John Cena having that match, and it would be the best WWE match of the decade.
it really would, because no matter what any of you say, Roman Reigns and John Cena are excellent wrestlers and excellent storytellers.
They are. They're both excellent wrestlers, and like they could do most of the spots in that match. But like literally, like if you just remade that match, this like, you know, let's say WrestleMania is John Cena versus Roman Reigns, and they did a carbon copy of Okada versus Naito only with spears and AAs instead of Rainmakers and Destinos, it would be the best match that WWE has ever done in a decade. Like, it would be the best match.
It's true, and but
go ahead.
The executives and the creatives and Vince will not allow Cena and Roman Reigns to do what Okada and Naito did. Like, they're limited.
Well, and it's not the audience. Like, the audience that is watching WWE is not watching it for intricate storytelling. They're not watching it for incredibly technical wrestling. They're watching it because, you know, characters are doing moves that are easily predictable and they know what they're going to get. And they want to cheer when, you know, John Cena does the five knuckle shuffle, and they want to cheer when Roman Reigns pumps his fist. And I'm not making fun of those people for liking that, but like, the product is just different, right? So like, it's aimed to a different people. But it's just, it's such a testament to, like, you watch Wrestle Kingdom, you watch a match that is as good as the main event is, and you just think it's good because the quality of wrestling that has come out of Japan is so absurdly high that a match that would be a match of the decade for the largest wrestling company in the world is just another match for them.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's you want WWE to be as good as this because it would be the ultimate place, but it's not, and I don't know if it ever will be.
Well, but it can't be because, again, like, New Japan's audience is Japan, which even then it's not. I mean, like, 40,000 people is no joke. I mean, that's a lot of people that like wrestling over there. But they're reaching 150,000-200,000 people in America, and WWE is reaching an audience, like a global audience of millions. Like, millions of people watch it every week. And those millions of people, they have it on while they're, you know, doing laundry or cooking dinner, or their kids are watching it and they're just hanging out in the room or whatever. Like, it is disposable entertainment for most of its runtime. And WWE is functionally no different than the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is giant, big, colorful things that are happening that you will forget about 2 weeks later as though they never happened. It's just fun for everybody who wants to watch it. But if you're a hardcore nerd about this stuff, you will look at basically every Marvel movie and be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. That's a reused plot. They did that again. This doesn't make any sense. And like, that's why you have New Japan Pro Wrestling, is if you want to dig down to the details, you can do that over there. But you can't do that and have it appeal to 7 million, 10 million, 20 million people. Like, you just have to have it be fun and semi-interesting and hit all the same spots and do all the things that people cheer for. And occasionally you can do something interesting, and occasionally you can have a match that's like really technically, you know, sound and make the people that are really nerdy about that stuff super happy. And that'll tide them over for 4 months while you give them utter shit until the next match like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they run the business exactly the way they're supposed to run that business. They know the audience they're trying to reach. They know what makes them money. They know what, you know, increases their television deal. They know what'll be popular on Facebook. They know what's going to be popular on YouTube. And they make content to meet that audience. And unfortunately, when you talk about popular culture, the thing that is the most popular normally is not all that good. It's just a distraction, which is what WWE is for the most part. And like I said, that is fine. It is a way to make money. It's a valid way to do wrestling, and people genuinely enjoy it. So why would you poo-poo on it? You know, I don't like it. I don't watch it really anymore at all. But like, it's because I found something else I like more, so I spend more time on it, and that's all it is.
So after this Wrestle Kingdom, do you think Chris Jericho and Naito are going to go at it?
Yes, and I think they're going to do it at the G1 special in the USA, which will be huge.
That's in Los Angeles, right?
It's in Los Angeles. Tickets go on sale in 2 weeks, and they're very expensive, but I'm probably going to shill out for it.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be insane. I wonder who Omega will go to.
Yeah, I don't know. He has a program with Jay White, but that's being resolved at the end of this month, or the end of next month. End of this month? Anyway, it's coming up sooner than later, so... I don't know what's going to happen with Omega, but I mean they're going to stack that LA show pretty heavily, because again, like, they want to make a big expansion into America, and they need to have matches that are really going to draw the attention of American people. So it's going to be a big deal, but I'm not sure what's actually going to be there. It's March 25th,
yeah.
I think it's on.
Yes, 24th or 25th, something like that, but I remember seeing that. But yeah, Chris Jericho, Naito is going to be awesome. Whoever Omega goes to is going to be good. New Japan's so good.
It's so good.
Yeah, if you don't know about it, or if you're curious, seriously, give it a shot. It's amazing. New Japan Pro Wrestling, it's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about some of these indie wrestlers we've seen through the indie shows that are moving up in the world. It's confirmed, Brian Cage, the huge, gigantic, big dude that we've always seen in indie shows, went to Total Impact. TNA.
I
don't know, like, it's interesting. I want him in somewhere else other than Impact. I don't know, but he's such a fun wrestler to watch and super nice guy from what I've seen. I don't know what he'll do there.
Well, he'll be big and strong and put on good matches, and that's really all you can kind of ask of him, you know what I mean? He will never be in WWE because they don't like steroids, and he really likes them. So, like, it's...
True, and so does, I guess, Impact doesn't give a shit.
No, they don't have a wellness policy like that.
Okay.
So, like, and again, like, you know, it's just, he'll never be there. And plus, if he does go there... He probably has expectations for himself because, like, he's pretty much always on the top of the card of an indie show, or at least put in a featured match. And if he goes to WWE, he's just going to be a big guy who may not get routinely featured or plugged. And I just feel like he's doing fine. Like, he's doing what he loves to do. He's making enough money. Impact has a lighter touring schedule. He's probably making more money than he ever did, you know, before signing with them, and they don't care about his size. They don't care about how he gets there. As long as he performs well and he's, you know, okay to work with, which he is from all reports. Like you said, he's like super easy to get along with and like not a dickhead, and like let him do what he's got to do. Like, I'm interested to see what happens with Impact because, like, what's his name?
Did I read something that they got rid of their ring and just went back to the four-sided ring?
They did, which is fantastic because the six-sided ring is stupid and dumb. Yeah. So I agree that's a great decision. But also, Don Callis, Cyrus the Virus, is now like their head of creative, and he's really good at that stuff. Like, he's really smart and really good at booking people to be successful. And like, yeah, they, you know, they don't have a super deep talent pool in terms of like huge names, you know, like they've got Eli Drake and now they've got Austin Aries and they've got Johnny Impact, AKA Johnny Mundo, AKA Johnny Morrison, AKA Johnny Nitro. And they have EC3 for a little while longer. So they don't have huge names, but again, like if the product is good and the stories are interesting and the wrestling is good, Impact will be something worth watching. So I'm not going to go out of my way to record it or watch it anytime soon. I want to give it a couple of months to like see how people feel about it and see what they've done with the new creative team. But I can see myself halfway through the year maybe tuning into Impact on a weekly basis if it's actually like, you know, interesting stories with good wrestling. That's all I need. I don't need big names. I don't need flashy stuff. I just need stories that are interesting and wrestlers that know how to wrestle. And if that's what they're going to do with their brand is tell interesting stories with wrestlers that know how to wrestle, And they got my vote, you know?
No, absolutely. So what about Candice LeRae and Ricochet coming to WWE?
So sad about Candice LeRae because I'm never going to get to see her up close again because she's wonderful. I'm very happy for Candice LeRae because she gets to work with her husband on a huge stage. But, like, she was such, like, a huge part of independent wrestling that seeing her go away is going to be sad. Ricochet's been due for years now. So, yeah. I mean, it was a no-brainer that he would leave eventually. And, you know, I'm glad for him. He's not going to get used. He's not going to get pushed. He's not going to be anything. But, like, he gets to wrestle for WWE and make a lot of money and have fun matches with a bunch of people that he's wrestled, you know, a billion times on the indies. And, like, I'm happy that he gets to do what he's eventually wanted to do. But he's not going to go anywhere. He's just not. Like, he's not the type of performer that they want. So he's just going to put on great matches at NXT, and he'll be great on 205 Live when they bring him up there. But that's his career trajectory. And again, if he's fine with that, he should be happy for that because he's a great wrestler. That's all I can say.
There you go. There you go. It is good stuff. We wish them the best.
I do. I wish them both huge success and happiness. I think Candice is going to be super happy. I think Ricochet is going to be super happy. And that's what matters. Yep. If you're happy, you're doing the right thing.
There you go. All right, so one of our favorite pay-per-views in WWE is the Royal Rumble, and they don't have the full card set yet, but who do you think will be a surprise entrant in the women's and in the men's match this year? Who do you see coming back? Who do you think Vintage will see pop up for a second?
I think Trish Stratus is probably a likely one. I think Molly Holly will probably be likely for the women's one.
What about Beth Phoenix?
Maybe. I can see that too, for sure. I mean, they've been pushing her as a commentator and other stuff, so I can see her maybe making an appearance as well. I don't know if anyone else. Excuse me. I'm not sure of anyone else on the women's side because there's not – you got a fairly limited number of roster people, and they have a lot of women on the roster generally, and it would be – to me – but this is not my company. To me, if you are doing the world's first women's Royal Rumble, you need to, at a bare minimum, use every woman that you have on your roster. Unless you want to keep the champions out of it, which I get that. That's fine. You can keep the champions out of it. But, like, we shouldn't be skipping over, you know, Dana Brooke and Lana and Tamina in favor of bringing back people that retired 10 years ago. Right. You know, use them to pad out the 30 and bring some NXT people up to pad out the 30. But if you have 19 or 18 women wrestlers on your roster, every single one of them should be in that match. Like there's no excuse for doing a quote unquote history making thing and not allowing every woman who was good enough to be hired by you to not participate in that match.
Yeah, I agree. I very much agree. I mean, I guess you would save one or two spots for like a surprise, like. Interest,
oh, for sure.
But
they don't have enough women to fill it out. Like there has to be some legends that show up. I mean, there has to be. And I expect that and I welcome that. I'm just saying don't keep anyone out, you know.
Yeah, I expect Ember Moon to show up from NXT.
Probably. Yep.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, what about the men's? Like, do you think we'll see like somebody like Christian show up or...
I think he's retired. I doubt it. The men's is hard for me because I honestly don't know who I would care to see come back. Like wouldn't mind seeing Batista again, but like there's more stories to tell with him than a one-off.
Well, Batista also said he wanted to do a full-time schedule, like with house shows.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think it's too early for him to come back for the Rumble. And plus, if he did come back for the Rumble, you want to do something very impactful with him, which means that that's not the right place to debut him. But, like,
I mean, what would you do if Omega's music played?
Well, he just signed a new contract, and it would never happen. I would question it, honestly. If Omega's music played, I would actually feel bad for him, because he is just going to get mistreated and fucked over, because that's what they do when you come from Japan. They mistreat you and fuck you over. So, like, I hope that when he chooses to come to the WWE, which he will one day, I mean, I know he will be at WrestleMania one day, I hope he just is okay with, or I hope he accomplishes everything that he wants to accomplish besides ticking off boxes, like performing at WrestleMania, performing at Madison Square Garden, you know, like, just, I hope the remaining things on his checklist are just things he can only do from a checklist perspective on WWE, because he wants to change the business too bad. He's CM Punk, but not angry. You know what I mean? Like, he wants this business to be better, more fun, more inclusive, and he wants to change the way wrestling is presented. And you can't do that in WWE. You cannot. You are completely controlled by what they want you to do in every aspect, which, again, is part of the product, and that's fine. It's a way to do wrestling. It's just not a good fit for him until he is become so successful that the only thing he has left to do is perform at WrestleMania. And then, yeah, I want to see him come over. I want to see him have a good time. I want to see him make a lot of money and just fuck around with his friends. But he needs to stay away for at least 2 or 3 more years.
Yeah, okay. I get it. Going back to the women's, do you think Ronda Rousey or AJ Lee will show up?
AJ Lee is a hard no. There's no way they're inviting anyone around CM Punk back. Ronda Rousey is maybe. I can see her coming in. But again, like,
what would the story be?
You're going to want to set up an angle for her for WrestleMania, and I'm not sure if the Royal Rumble match is the right way to do it. And again, especially if you're going to take the spotlight away from someone who's currently on the roster to feature another part-timer, I won't like it. But I think it's very possible that she shows up, and I kind of hope she does. I mean, if she's going to quit UFC, and she should, this is a great second career for her, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's a good fit, and she should come in. I just don't know if the Rumble is the right way to debut her. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, it would be still, yeah, because you don't want to have somebody like her come in and lose something on her first
match. And it's just a very chaotic match. Like, if that's your first pro wrestling match, is the Rumble? Like, there's so many things that can go wrong in that match that might make you look weird or weak or confused. You know what I mean? Like, unless you have a very simple spot in and out, that's just a very difficult match to make your debut in if you're not already a wrestler. So, like, if you're going to do something with her, you need to, like, whatever the women's match is, you can debut her at the Rumble, but basically just have her come in at the Rumble and just fucking kick the champion in the face after they win. You know what I mean? And just throw down the gauntlet and say, great, you've beaten them. I beat up women for a living, so let's go do this. You know, and, like, just have that be the debut. It's fine.
Okay. All right. I get it. I see it. I like it. I like it a lot. Do you think
a lot?
Do you think our favorite wrestler, Chuckles Goldberg, will make an appearance?
This will be his WWE debut.
Sort of.
Well, he's never been in a match before. He just
been in the ring.
He got in the ring and all of a sudden was shirtless.
oh my god. I was dying at that. I still can't believe that happened.
It did happen. He just took his shirt off in the middle of the ring. Or never had one on. I'm not sure what happened. Like, I have to go back and watch that replay in slow motion and see if, like, he lost his shirt on the way to the ring or if he, like, just took, like, he couldn't contain his joy and just ripped it off because he was so proud of his dad. I don't know what's going on with Chuckles Goldberg, but I feel like feel like he's probably not too far away from becoming an NXT superstar.
Yeah, no, that's his gimmick. He takes the shirt off. Oh,
he takes the shirt off and you're just blinded by the pastiness.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so when I got my ring set, or my ring from Mattel, it came with an exclusive old Bill Goldberg figure. Like, it came with his, like, return at Survivor Series with the gray beard and the, you know, the like, the WWE Bill Goldberg shorts.
Yeah.
And, like, it came with, like, an announce table and chairs and monitors and all that kind of stuff. And I was super, super sad that it didn't also come with a shirtless Chuckles accessory.
They need to do that.
Goldberg, you need to include Chuckles.
Oh, Chuckles Goldberg. We love you, Chuckles, forever in your debt. We need to make a shirt. Holy shit. We need shirts of Chuckles.
How would you make a shirt for someone who doesn't wear shirts?
Oh, it's like Inception. You go deeper. Oh, I love this. All right, so we're going to end our wrestling talk on Chuckles Goldberg, as we should. And let's talk a little bit about you and I are into records, and specifically, I think we're both into soundtracks. So what is it about soundtracks that turns you on?
Because they remind me of movies, and they're nice to listen to. Like, they're just nice to have on while you're doing other stuff or whatever. And a lot of times, the cover art can just be really interesting. But, like, I grew up as a big movie fan. So, like, when I transitioned into vinyl, it just made sense that I would collect the scores from these movies that I grew up with or just loved or whatever, because you can kind of, like, mentally revisit the film while you're listening to them. But, yeah, like, I just I a lot of it is just, like, they feel like artifacts from the movie itself. So, like, owning an original pressing of, you know, whatever the score is, it just feels like it's one more thing to own about a movie that you like. And sometimes, like, I just buy dumb shit because the cover's stupid and the movie is stupid. And I think it's hilarious that someone pressed the soundtrack to vinyl. So I get it. Yeah, I just love them. I would say, like, maybe not entirely half, but, like, I think I have somewhere close to about 1,200 or 1,300 vinyl, and I would say at least 400 to 500 of them are soundtracks.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's a lot. I don't think it's as many as you have, though.
Yeah, I guess I have all mine in a database, and I'm trying to think. I have some good ones for sure, like some really rare ones. I agree. Like, there's something about, because, you know, I grew up loving movies, and there's just something about certain soundtracks. Like, I love to play chess as well, and sometimes I'll put on a soundtrack, like a score, and listen to it while you play chess.
That's like you said, it's good, not calming music all the time, but it just fills the room with nice music that is semi-nostalgic and interesting, and you can cook to it. You can play chess to it. You can, like, play games to it. Like, that's what I normally do. Like, when I have friends over to play board games with me, like, if we play a horror board game, like Betrayal at House on the Hill, or what's that other game? I can't remember it, the name of it, but it's like a slasher. It's like a slasher board game.
I have no idea.
I forget. I feel bad. A Mixtape Massacre is what it's called. Okay. If I have people over to play those games, I'll go bust out, like, you know, a Goblin score from Dario Argento's movies, or I'll bring out, like, a George Romero score or Poltergeist or whatever. Like, I'll play that while we're playing the games. And, like, if we're playing Dungeons and Dragons, I'll play some more adventure music. Or if I'm just, like, whatever. Like, it's just great. It's great mood music for anything you might be doing. If I'm cooking, I'll throw on some, like, old Italian scores because they're, like, really peppy and they have nice songs. And, like, you can just pick all these things that just fit the mood of whatever you are doing. Like, most soundtracks, unless it's like The Fountain, which is one of my favorite soundtracks of all time, I don't just sit down and listen to them. I put them on to add a mood to other things I am doing, and soundtracks are awesome for that.
Good. Yeah, I agree with that. So what are some of the soundtracks that you've found that was totally knocked you off your, like, totally knocked your socks off? Like, you're somewhere and you're like, oh shit, I found this finally.
My first big one was Phantom of the Paradise, because it was really hard to find that for a while. And I found it for like $5 in a half price books. So I was super stoked about that. But I'm trying, I have The Bride of Frankenstein on vinyl. That was really cool. One of my early, when I first started collecting, I was like always super into finding the Death Waltz reissues of like the John Carpenter themes. So like when I found like an original pressing of like They Live and Halloween 2 and like their really, really early stuff, like they put out Donnie Darko and Zombie really early. Whenever I found those, I was super stoked about finding them. I don't think I have any specifically like – actually, you know what? There's two of them that I was super awesome – that I was like super stoked to find. I went to like a record store in Oklahoma that was like – that specializes in just old vinyl, and it's just stacked to the rafters with shit. And it's hard to move around because it's just boxes and boxes and boxes of vinyl. And I went there enough that one of the guys let me into his back room where he had like purchased a fuckload of vinyl, and he knew that I was into soundtracks, so he just let me go through all the soundtrack boxes that I wanted, and then he would give me a price on whatever it was, like just looking at it, saying like, oh, that's a really good copy or whatever, this is what I want for it. And I found the 1970 pressing of The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. The Ennio Morricone store of the Dario Argento movie, which was awesome. Yeah. And I found the 50s, recording of it's Dracula, Prince of Darkness, but it's a side A is like highlights from the score, and side B is Christopher Lee narrating a Dracula story.
Which is awesome.
So like that was a really awesome find.
That's super cool. I've been to places like that, and usually I don't luck out like you did with those types of places.
I went through like 8 boxes, so like, you know, there's definitely a lot of chaff, you know what I mean? Like,
yes. I mean,
there's a lot of stuff. It's like, oh, that again. Oh, that again. Oh, the patent score for the 10,000th time. Yeah. Great. I'll skip that.
Absolutely. There's always soundtracks that we always see, like the Patton one, South Pacific, Woman in Red. There's always
Camelot.
Yes, Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2, which are excellent soundtracks. I don't know why anybody would get rid of those.
I see like McVicker a lot. I see Guys with Dolls a lot. I see you go to Half Price Books and you see a lot of the same shit. And sometimes, like, another Half Price Books find that was awesome. Oklahoma is amazing for this, apparently. I went to a Half Price Books up there, and they had excerpts from the Exorcist soundtrack, like the 1976, 1974 pressing for $2.99. And I was like, yes.
Really?
Yes. It's like a $40 vinyl.
Wow.
I was like, yep, I will take the Exorcist soundtrack. Thank you. Like sometimes, like just those stores, like I guess maybe it was just because it was Oklahoma and they just don't know what they're getting in terms of soundtracks. They just, you know, set a price on it and put it out because it's an old movie and they don't know what it is. I found a bunch of really cool stuff. Like I found, the score for Carrie, the Pina Donaggio score for Carrie.
That's
there
a good
for
one.
Like $3 or $4, you know. I found The Howling. I found the original pressing of The Howling in Cincinnati. It was a little more expensive than $3, but like I jumped the fuck all over that. And then of course Waxwork repressed it recently, and that sounds great. And I'm not a stickler for having the original pressings. It's cool if I find them, but if there's a repress and I don't own it, I'm happy to own the repress. I don't need to own the originals, although
that's where
there is a really nice charm to saying, like, it's like I said, it's like owning an artifact from the movie when you have the original pressing. And it's cool to have it.
Yeah, see, that's where I differ from you. I'm on the lookout for the originals, and I think most of the ones I have are the authentic original soundtracks.
Right.
From the time.
And that's comes down to cost for me generally. Like I said, like would I like to have an original pressing of Nightbreed or whatever? Like maybe, but I have the repress that Waxwork did and it sounds awesome. And I don't need the original. Like I said, if I found it and it was cheap, I would buy it in a heartbeat. But yeah, I get it. But so like what are some of your originals that you're super proud of?
Oh, I have originals of Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, if you can believe it.
Nice.
Those are super rare, and I have the originals of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Nice.
And I have the originals of the Halloween movies. Let's see, what else? What other good... I'm trying to remember my collection of what like really... Oh, I have an original Boogeyman, which I actually found at Half Price Books, and it was like $10 and it's great condition. And then like I went and looked like later, and supposedly that pressing or whatever that is, it's like insanely expensive.
Okay.
I'm trying to look right now to see how much that is actually going for, but it's a lot of money. It's called The Boogeyman. It's a horror movie. And I don't know if you remember that. Do you remember that?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's insane. I don't know. It's a few $100, something like that. I've done a few Mondo things. I have some Mondo stuff. Normally I don't have Mondo stuff that I already own, but I was lucky enough to get like a Pink Drive record when that first came out.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And, like the Tales from the Crypt, Conductor one. I know those.
Yeah, those are ones I'm missing. I missed out on those and I'm bummed about those. I have almost all. I'm missing the Joker. And I'm missing Mr. Freeze from the Batman the Animated Series 7-inch runs they had, but I have the other ones. I gotta find. Eventually, I'll probably track down that Tales from the Crypt 7-inch. That's one I missed because I'm a big Mondo vinyl collector. I have almost all of them. There's definitely some I'm missing, especially from the earlier days. Mm-hmm. But like, I have a pretty healthy Mondo collection, and a lot of them are variants. I got the orange Halloween repress.
I did too. I think that's the only soundtrack from Mondo that I rebought just because I loved Halloween soundtrack so much.
Yeah,
and I actually got the orange one, which is surprising.
Yeah.
They're just fun to list to you. Oh, I have like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and Return of the Living Dead 1 and 2.
Nice.
That Return of the Living Dead soundtrack is amazing. Holy shit. All the punk music is so good. Some other good ones, like I recently got Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Nice.
Which is just amazing. But you know what? You know, when you go through these soundtracks, they're just so fun. Even like, oh, I found Critters and Garbage Pail Kids soundtrack. Like... Oh, yes, there is a Garbage Pail Kids soundtrack from the movie, which is one of the worst movies ever made. But when I go to look, my favorite places to go are like these dirty old record stores and just go through stacks. And you're just like, oh, shit, it's something fun about finding stuff like that.
Yeah, I went to a shitty old record store in Florida when I was just there, in Naples. And I found it's like a compilation of music from Friday the 13th 1, 2, and 3. And it came with like 3D glasses. You could look at the cover. Like my version didn't have the 3D glasses because it's old and kind of beaten up. But it was just like, it was just such a cool thing to stumble across. Like just this weird compilation with like a hand drawn or like, you know, a painted Jason portrait on the cover. have like a, you know, a fold out that had like Jason stabbing at the viewer. Like, it was just a cool packaged vinyl, and like I own the scores to 1, 2, and 3, all of them through Waxwork. I don't need this, but it was just like, it was just cool to stumble across it randomly, you know. And it was like $15 or something, and it was not in great shape. But like, again, it was like a $50 or $60 or $70 vinyl because of like, if it were complete, because of just how randomly weird it was. So that was an easy pickup. Like you said, it's cool to have something from that era. It just feels like you are owning something important.
No, yeah, no, it's super cool, and I'm happy to say that I have all the John Carpenter originals, even Big Trouble in Little China,
nice.
And The Thing. Oh, also one of the ones I found at a local record store here, I have the Lost in Translation picture disc with Scarlett Johansson's ass on the cover in those pink see-through panties she wears. And it's just, I saw that and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I have to get this in my pervy ways. But oh,
that's you.
I know, it is me. I have the original Jurassic Park picture disc.
Yeah, you showed me that before.
I love that. You know, just some, like, the Critters one is so good, just because I love that song. Oh, I have an original Song of the South one, which I found at a Half Price Books.
I have that, too. I found that as well, yeah.
Is it the one, it's like the orangey cover with Uncle Remus and the kids on the front?
I think that's right,
Or is it the green, because there's a greenish cover one, too, but I have the orange one. I saw that, and I'm like, oh, yes. They won't ever release this.
They'll never repress that, correct?
They will not. And I guess Mondo wise, I think I have one of the first Mondo records they released, which is the Beyond. I think that's one of their first ones they released.
Yeah, that was that came out right before I started collecting vinyl seriously, and I was like, well, I don't really need this because I don't have a record player. And then, of course, I've regretted it ever since. And I have the Death Waltz repress. Mm-hmm. Of Beyond, which is the same record. There's no difference. It's just different cover, different color, you know. But like, so I have the score now, but I did miss out on that original pressing, which was nice. That was a cool cover and a cool release.
Yeah, I love it. So in addition to soundtracks, like, I'm really into jazz and blues, but what about you? Is there certain artists that you really love or certain genre of music other than soundtracks that you...
I am a big compilations fan. Like, I buy a lot of, like, garage rock compilations, punk compilations, like, 60s throwback compilations. Like, I have all these compilations of, like, I've collected this series called Hillbillies in Hell. That is a bunch of compilations of like country artists singing about Satan and drugs and killing their girlfriends.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's super rad. So I have a bunch of those. I've got a collection of like in the late 60s, Japan kind of like got hit with a new wave revival that was hitting England like 3 or 4 years previously. These Japanese started doing like Beatles-esque music, but harder and more like punky. And I've got like a couple of compilations of those, of like just singles that got put onto a record of like these just fucking no-name 60s Japanese bands playing new wave rock. I got a bunch of like girl rock from the 60s. I just listened to a compilation the other day of like, it's called like Acid Nightmares, and it's a whole bunch of, again, like 45 compilations of like psychedelic like stoned out rock bands from the late 60s and early 70s that only made one album and it was a single. So I'm a big compilations guy. Like, I've got a compilation of like punk rock from Europe. So like it's got like a bunch of dinosaurs and cavemen on the cover, and it says something like, you know, we don't want nuclear war or something like that on it. But like, you look in the back and it's like, it's German punk rock, Scandinavian punk rock, Italian punk rock, Canadian punk rock. Like, it's all just punk from all around Europe, and it's awesome.
That is badass. I see. That's one thing I don't have. I don't have compilations like that. And while you talking about it, I fucking need this.
Yeah, I like, I'm a big, like, I spend some time in the various artists section and just, you know, poke around and see if I see something that's cool. Like, I'm a big 60s soul fan, so, like, I have a bunch of compilations of that. Because a bunch of this stuff is, like, singles that you're just never going to track down. Like, you'd spend so much money getting the singles when you can just get someone repressing a collection onto vinyl. And then sometimes some of them are crap, and there's, like, one or two great songs in, like, 10 or 12 not so great songs, but sometimes you run into compilations that are just fucking awesome. Like, I have so many great punk compilations that are just loud noise, but I love them.
Yeah, completely. I like it a lot.
Yeah, but yeah, go look that up. Go look up Hillbillies from Hell. Like, there's five volumes. The fifth one just came out like 2 weeks ago, but they've been doing them since like 2013 or 2014, and some of them are pretty fucking interesting, man.
Dude, I've got to check that out. Hillbillies from Hell. I think that's a perfect place to end this. Hillbillies from Hell.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I'm definitely, though, I mean, you will see that on my Discogs list for sure.
Or Hillbillies in Hell. Sorry.
In Hell. Hillbillies in Hell.
But still.
Still. Oh, I can't wait. Well, Tom, thanks for joining me on your birthday for this podcast. We've gone. I mean, shit, we can go for 8 hours. I don't give a shit. I have nothing to do.
I have sleep to do.
I have sleep to do. But we've been going for a good solid 80 minutes here, and
I know.
I feel like we just touched the tip of the iceberg, but we'll save it for another time.
Yeah, there's plenty more to talk about.
Yes, but thank you, man. Happy birthday, and. I guess before we leave, I want you to give a shout out to Mike, and I want you to give who you think should win the Royal Rumble and main event at WrestleMania.
Mike Pertil, I love you. You are an amazing man, and hopefully I will see you in Long Beach when New Japan comes there, so that I can see you mark out for Marty Scurll in person. When it comes to a Royal Rumble, I hate to sound like a hipster, but I honestly don't give a shit who wins because I'm not going to watch WrestleMania probably.
Oh my
so
God.
I don't care. I don't care. I feel like Shinsuke Nakamura has a pretty good shot, because that makes sense for an AJ Styles feud, and that would, you know, get him over a little bit, and it would make for a really big build up to a match that a lot of people want to see. And I kind of hope that's what happens. But, like, at the end of the day, the product is boring to me. So I don't care who wins because I'm not going to watch it.
So we're just going to say that Tom wants Roman Reigns to win and then go on to win WrestleMania again.
I mean, he's going to win WrestleMania anyway. And that's fine. And that's okay. For the people that like it, man, more power to them.
Oh, Tomathan. All right. Well,
man, I've spent so much of the last couple of years watching independent wrestling that going back to WWE is just horrifyingly bad. It's just been like it's not that they are failing at what they're doing, although I'm sure sometimes they do. Just the product that they are putting out is not for me. And that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I am not interested in the stories you are telling. So I will watch New Japan and my local independent shows, and that's all I need. Thank you for trying.
They'll get you back at some point. You just need a break. But yeah, all right. So Shinsuke, we'll see if it happens. And we are the Multimedia Men. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And I'm Brian Kluger and Tom Nix. Tom Nix, should they find you anywhere or anything?
I don't have Twitter. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but like, unless I know you in real life, you're probably not getting on my Facebook feed. Okay. So you can find me at TheTomNix on Instagram if you want to see photos of like my DVD collection and my hair. And that's really about it.
It's amazing. I love it. Yeah, his hair is glorious. But yes, thank you again. We'll be back.
Oh, thank you for having me on. This is a fun chat.
Yeah, and we'll hopefully be back at some point in the future to talk more wrestling and records and movies and Secret Hitler.
And Secret Hitler is wonderful.
It's so good. All right, we'll see you soon.